Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Mauley, along with my co-host,
Travis Buzzell.
And we are here for another great episode where we look at private practice, we talk to physicians, and this podcast really is kind of centered around how can we get those individuals, those physicians that are struggling and looking for options to either stay private or become private, because let's all be honest, in today's world, it's become very corporatized. People are going into employed positions and getting frustrated with that. So we have a great guest today.
Yeah. You know, and I think too, I mean, we were kind of talking about this, you know, this afternoon, but, you know, our guest today, Bill McDonald of My Financial Coaching, we kind of had an opportunity to catch up a little bit before we started recording the podcast tonight. And it leans in really good to kind of the big picture of, you know, what better way to remain independent and entrepreneurial other than, you know, making sure, you know, you have your house in order. So I think the theme of tonight's podcast is going to be kind of surrounded around financial planning. And, you know, we'll obviously defer to the expert to fill us in because we were talking about a bunch of stuff before this that I had no idea what he was talking about.
Well, I think that's the great thing about this, right? I mean, we've had different guests from our first guest was Dr. Lombardi. We've had other physicians like Dr. Moby Parsons. We've had Marty Nichols with Physicians First Bancorp.
Yeah.
We've had implant brokers with Stu Brandon.
Amanda. I mean, just so
We've had attorneys. So to finally get on to the, like the financial planning side of things, I think is extremely important for physicians. So, Bill, love to hear your kind of 30,000 foot view of who you are, where you're from. You and I had a chance to talk. You currently are in Sedona, which is like probably my favorite place on earth other than maybe Italy. So, Bill, love to welcome you.
Right. Thank you. I started My Financial Coach about 6 years ago with an investor group, like-minded individuals. My career over several decades has been designing executive compensation and benefit strategies for a number of organizations throughout the country. I worked with a lot of healthcare companies, physician groups, and so forth. So when we put My Financial Coach together, we were looking to provide unbiased and unconflicted financial advice. When I was traveling in and out of those companies, I just noticed that people really never understood their compensation and benefit programs. They didn't understand tax strategies. And if they didn't understand all of that, they were missing the boat, missing a lot of opportunities. So many people would reach out to their quote unquote financial advisor. And that advisor might be somebody with a large brokerage firm managing money, might be an insurance agent, but it really isn't an unbiased and unconflicted advisor. Personally, I worked with many advisors over the years, and I could never figure out if they were working on their retirement plan or mine, because I couldn't figure out, you know, what they were selling, what they were pitching. And I said, who can I go get advice from? And fortunately, you know, I've been in the financial services industry, so I knew a lot of this and created a lot of ideas. But what does the average person do? With all the complexities of tax law, all of the products and services out there, how can we put that aside and take a look at a fresh picture? So that's how we put My Financial Coach together.
So, I mean, I guess this might be a really obvious question, but Bill, like, why financial planning? Like, can you give us a little background, like, you know, schooling? It sounds like from doing a little research, you're kind of doing some education in the Massachusetts area. Maybe you can fill us in on kind of where you went to school and like, how did you get into financial planning?
Yes, great. So I, so undergrad, I went to Northeastern University, and then I went through the Harvard Business School, more of business, running a business. And I got into financial services really early in my career. I started putting together qualified pension plans, and I started to put together executive benefit and physician strategies together, mostly based around tax. So I had a really in-depth experience working with tax law, tax lawyers. I hired lots of lawyers, lots of actuaries. And financial planning is bringing all those pieces together. You know, when we first meet someone and they say, I already have a financial advisor. And I say, explain to me what they do for you. And they go, well, they're with Merrill Lynch and they manage my money. I said, that sounds like a wealth manager. Do you have a CPA? Yes. Do you have an attorney? Yes. Do you have an insurance agent? Yes. Do you have somebody handle property casualty? Yes. Who's putting all those pieces together? And that's what financial planning is. So I wanted to be kind of the family office of bringing all of the advisors together so that we're working on a plan with all of the disciplines. If you think about medicine as an example, everyone's not a specialist in everything. So we're kind of like the concierge medicine or the primary care physician. We do the blood work, the EKG, the x-rays on the front end. We get to know the patient. We get to understand their situation. And then we have specialists we can work with. Many people already have some of the specialists in place. And if they haven't outgrown them, we continue to work with their current team.
So it's interesting that when we were talking earlier, you mentioned some of the health groups that you've worked with, and you mentioned NDVIP. Well, one of our first guests was my college roommate, one of my best friends. He was in my wedding, Greg Beato. He's a MDVIP surgeon down in Blacksburg, Virginia. He is a team physician for Virginia Tech. And, you know, I've one of the our title of that particular podcast was Concierge Medicine. So I love the fact that you kind of put together the financial planning aspect of MDVIP. Can you speak to, like you mentioned, I think you said 96% of the clients that you work with are physicians. Like, what drew you to physicians and why? Was there someone in your family that was a physician, or what drew you to that particular subspecialty?
Yeah, good question. In fact, I'm going to the MDVIP annual conference next week to speak to the group down in Washington, D.C. But it was interesting when we first put the company together, MDVIP was one of our first clients. So we started working with all of these private practices because they went through a life event where they became concierge physicians. They started to get their life in order. And we just found that physicians who are very smart individuals, they're well-educated, they're very skeptical because somewhere along the line in their career, they've been burned by someone. Maybe they've chased too many shiny objects and they haven't really put a full plan together. And we come in and we're unbiased and unconflicted. Now, being unbiased is one thing. Unbiased means I can sell you a product A or a product B, but being unconflicted means I don't have anything to sell. So what we're saying is, do you need product A or product B? So let's take a look at your situation and let's look at whatever solutions are available. We don't directly sell any products. We don't manage money. We don't manage insurance, but we know a lot about it. We bring in a lot more transparency so that people make better decisions. So getting involved in physicians in all different aspects of their career has been interesting. So some of the concierge docs have their own practice, small staff, and they're trying to build the practice so they have a life event and maybe selling the practice. We work with a lot of 1099 independent contractors that work for some of the big organizations. And the first thing they do is set up their own corporation. They start to try to figure out, being a 1099 versus a W-2, what are the pros and cons? How can I maximize my wealth building and so forth as a 1099. So we work with, again, all different aspects.
I hate to interrupt there, but like, let's not assume that our viewers and listeners understand the difference between a W-2 and a 1099. I mean, that's a pretty basic concept, but can you just go through those and understand and maybe explain the benefits and the pros and cons of both of those?
Yeah, so the difference between a W-2 and a 1099. So if you're going to work at a hospital as a W-2 employee, then you're basically looking at the benefit package that's being offered by that hospital. And if it's a for-profit hospital, they have certain benefits. And if it's a not-for-profit hospital, they have certain benefits and maybe even some restrictions. So you don't get to pick kind of the menu of the things you can do. So you, if you're working for a nonprofit hospital, they give you access to a 403B plan, which is kind of your 401k, and they give you access to other programs like that for savings and reducing your taxes. But then when it comes to deductions, you can't do many deductions if you're an employee because you don't own anything. Flip on the other side. Now, if you're an independent contractor, you're being paid directly under contract. So many people then set up an entity. So they set up either an LLC or an S-Corp. And by doing that, they're able to now maximize pension benefits. They can do a 401k. They can do a profit sharing plan, get up to around $70,000 a year, then go all the way into a cash balance pension plan where they can put about $500,000 away, depending on their age and income and so forth. So they can do a lot more. They can write off a lot more expenses, and they can control their destiny more from a tax and wealth accumulation standpoint.
So one of the things that I kind of have heard you mention now a few times that I just want to kind of revisit and reiterate, I guess one of the things that I'm learning a little bit more about you and my financial coach is, you know, this whole concept of unbiased financial planning. It's kind of like, you know, not necessarily selling anyone a product. You're kind of evaluating, you know, their current situation and what they need or might not need, but you're not necessarily the benefactor of that piece, right? Because you're kind of the concierge, kind of full, kind of more broad spectrum, you know, approach to all of these various things that are associated with financial planning, but it doesn't necessarily mean kind of to your point. And I think I kind of heard you say like maybe to your financial advisor, like, you know, whose retirement are you setting up for, yours or mine? So, I mean, can you just maybe just delve into that a little bit more? Cause I think people, you know, I think that's kind of the hesitation with a lot of people in financial planning. One, I think there's, you know, I think there's just kind of a mental block there that, you know, I have time and, you know, I'll get to it. I need the cash now. They don't really understand the repercussions of not starting that or having that conversation because there's a lot of things that they don't know, but they always feel like someone's trying to sell them something. Where I feel like your approach in this whole concept of like unfinancial or unbiased financial planning is sort of set up to, hey, we're going to try to take your situation and make you as successful as possible, regardless of what that means in terms of what your needs are or are not right now or what they could be in the future.
Yes. So so we're a subscription model. So you pay us a one-time flat fee on the front end. It's $2,000 or it's discounted with some of the associations and groups. And then you pay us $100 a month. And you get your own CFP, not a call center. So they're all fiduciaries and they're all salaried employees of the company and they hold no licenses to sell anything. So the first thing they do is they bring everything together on a very secure technology platform. So we get your assets, your liabilities, we get everything in one place, your wills, your trust, last 3 years, your tax returns, get everything together, and then you hold virtual sessions with your own CFP. There's no limit on the amount of time that you can spend throughout the year for that $100 a month. So the first thing we want to know is, let's look at cash flow. How much money is coming in the door and how much money is going out and where is it going? And what are your goals? And What are you trying to accomplish? And someone says, I'd like to retire in 7 years. Well, let's look at your investment portfolio. Let's look at all your other investments you might have outside the retirement accounts. And let's start to project out your retirement income in the future to see if you have enough to meet your goals and objectives today. And if you do, maybe we can help to tweak a little bit your situation to improve upon it. And if you're way behind, we can help you get back on track. So if you have a broker that you're working with and you're happy with that broker and they're doing a great job for you, we can bring transparency to what they're doing. And I'll give you a good example there. We had a physician, she had about $5 million under management with one of her financial advisors. And she asked my CFP, she said, why am I not getting market returns like everyone else? I talked to people that are getting much higher returns. So he looked at her portfolio. Now, he's not going to tell her what stocks to buy. Sure. And he's not going to talk about balancing the portfolio. That's what her wealth manager does. But he started looking at her risk tolerance and looking at her other assets to make sure that her portfolio was allocated properly. But one thing he noticed was she was being charged 150 basis points to manage $5 million. And her first question, not being knowledgeable, was, is that fair? And my CFP said, no, it's like twice as much. And you think about it's dragging on your portfolio, you know, about 75 basis points is being dragged just from fees. And if you think about what 150 basis points of $5 million is, that's a pretty big fee to manage money. So we ended up sending her to a subject matter expert firm that we had vetted out, who ended up charging her about 70 basis points, got her portfolio structured in concert with her other assets, and she was very happy with it. In fact, I think her husband moved some of his money over also. But that's an example of looking under the tent and bringing some transparency, educating people, making them better stewards of their money so they're making better decisions.
No, I mean, I think it makes total sense because, I mean, I have been very fortunate to have some good experiences, you know, from like a wealth management and, you know, financial planning component with a group here locally that I'm involved with personally. But getting to that point, Bill, and to kind of comment and piggyback off that story is kind of like, you know, I'm a med device DME distributorship owner, right? Dr. Molly is an orthopedic surgeon. Like, we're really good at the things that we're really good at, but a lot of the things that you're talking about, that's just not my wheelhouse, right? I mean, how many basis points should or should I not be paying? What all is all encompassing of that? I mean, even to kind of, to your point, you know, having certain things aligned, and it's like, I have no clue, but I feel like a lot of people's hesitation where I feel like what your group does is a lot different is you kind of feel like the guy you're going to talk to about investing your money is, I mean, kind of aligned with, you know, well, yeah, I definitely want to give you, you know, a return and some production. I mean, because you're going to look at it, you know, once a year and do review and all that sort of stuff. But you have to assume that a lot of the stuff they do is aligned with them as well, or else why are they doing it?
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing that you touched on earlier, Bill, you said you guys have a flat fee system. Right, you don't have like a percentage base or anything like that.
Right.
That to me also makes a lot of sense because it's just like whether you are this guy or girl or this guy and girl making this base salary per year or this base salary per year, you look at your clients kind of equally and you're looking out for their best interests. And again, we all know that physicians historically are not the best business owners or best businessmen or women. And I like to think of myself a little bit differently because I do own my own private practice, but by far and away, I'm not the guy that's going to talk to you about basis points and tax strategies and retirement plans, because that's just not my, as you mentioned, Travis, it's not my wheelhouse.
Yeah,
that's what I rely on people like yourself for, Bill.
And so Bill, I don't know a ton about this market, but I mean, this is just me peripherally, just, you know, what I perceive of you know, kind of the program that you're talking about. But so a $2,000 flat fee and $100 a month to have access to your own personal CFP is like $3,200 to start for the first year and then $1,200 a year. I mean, am I getting that correctly?
That's correct. Yeah.
I mean, that seems really competitive to do that, right? I mean, to me,
what was it again? 2000 for the,
and then $100 a month. So yeah. I mean, $3,200 your first year and then $1,200 a year. I mean, to me, to have access to that, I mean, cause a lot of those, and again, this is how I interpret this. A lot of the, you know, cause, and maybe they're just, maybe I'm mislabeling them, because financial planner. And like you said, Bill, I think in the beginning of the conversation, it was like, you're describing more of a wealth management kind of scenario to me and not necessarily a financial planner. I think sometimes maybe that's where the disconnect comes from. Cause to me, it's like that financial planner is doing your investments and this and that, and they're getting commissions off of, you know, the performance of essentially your big bucket. But what you're talking about is, you know, we're going to give this big kind of picture. And then, yeah, if you need to get involved with, you know, other groups, we certainly can do that. Or we can work with the groups you already work with. And that's not a problem.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people say I'm a financial planner, and they might even be a CFP. They might even have the designation. But the reality is, if you're a wealth manager, you're going to spend about 15% of your time on planning and 85% on what you know well, which is managing money. So it's almost like having a hammer. Everybody looks like a nail. So I'm going to be looking for a solution around wealth management. But it might be an insurance solution. It might be a tax solution. It might be a legal solution. And as a wealth manager, they don't have the capabilities of thinking outside the wealth management box to come up with the solution.
So here's my question. And I think I know the answer. Travis probably knows the answer because he alluded to it a little bit earlier. But the young physicians out there that are listening to this, compound interest and the importance of not waiting until you're in your 50s or 60s to start thinking about retirement. How important is that? And how much do you emphasize that to your younger clients that like, it's important to get involved with this early, even though you just started your first career and your first job, oftentimes in your early to maybe even mid 30s, where you're finally starting to get a paycheck as opposed to, you know, doing work for free as either a resident or a med student or whatever it may be. So how important is that to you, is like the timing of when you start to get involved in all this?
It's very important. And we have programs with the American Association for Physician Leadership and the American College of Emergency Physicians, where we work with a lot of their new docs just starting out. I mean, the first question is, hey, I have all this student debt. And should I start paying down the student debt? Should I buy a house? Should I put money into the retirement plan? You know, help me make some decisions today. And if they're an employee of a company, that's one thing. If they're an independent contractor, that's different. So we have subject matter experts that can help them on the student loan side of things, looking at how to qualify for different programs for forgiveness or how to refinance, how to make payments, how to file their income tax to lower their payments. So we spend a lot of time early on with people. And to your point, it's very important because the earlier you get started, obviously, the better off you are late in life. And what's sad to me is when I see a lot of physicians in their 60s and early 70s that don't have enough money to retire. They've made a lot of money in their career. They've chased a lot of shiny objects. They've made bad investment decisions. They got bad advice. And now they're saying, you know, help me get back on track.
And I've heard it from my mentors and people that I dealt with in residency. It's just like they still enjoyed doing what they were doing, but they did it because they had to do it. Yeah. Right. And there were some things that occurred, whether it was the financial crash of 2008, 2009, this, that. But still, like, you should have maybe been a little bit better prepared and prepared to weather those storms than to have to continue working into. Now, if you still love it and you're in your 70s, and then that's one thing. But do you guys get involved with that with your physician clients? Because to me, one of the biggest questions that I would first ask if I was in your shoes is like, what's your ideal retirement age, right? Because everybody assumes from just like the general population that it's 65. But what is it for physicians? What's the most common answer you get? Is it 50? Is it 65? Is it 70?
I think, which is kind of not really surprising, I shouldn't think, but a lot of people never retire. They may cut back in their practice. They may bring on a younger physician. They may start working with their real estate investments, but they don't really retire as the way we remember retirement. When you, you know, hit age 65, you get your gold watch and you go off and play golf. People are still involved somehow. So we have a lot of physicians still practicing in their late 70s, early 80s. And now what we're helping them with is how to deal with some of the surprises that they now have later in life, like required minimum distributions. So they spent their career, and this is where we help the younger folks when they're first starting out, is you start to tax defer a lot of money today. But really what you're doing is kicking the can down the road, because someday you're going to have to pay the tax when you take distribution. And when you get to a certain age, 73, soon to go to 75, the government says, look, you've got all this money tax sheltered. You've had it for a number of years. We're going to require you to take minimum distributions, whether you need the money or not. So how do you plan around that? And one thing people need to deal with in retirement is what is AGI, adjusted gross income, because their adjusted gross income in retirement is going to impact how much they pay for Medicare. If you go to Medicare.gov and you look at a chart there, the more money you make, the more they take on your Medicare insurance. Social Security, the more you make, the higher the tax on your Social Security. And then required minimum distribution. So we help people plan from the beginning all the way through retirement. So we have a number of physicians in retirement, and we're helping them, you know, manage their cash flow and manage their benefits and so forth.
Well, I mean, there's just so many layers to that, right? I mean, just all the things you were talking about. I mean, I just feel like there is a lot that people don't know, because it's not what they do. It's not their wheelhouse, which we've kind of already said. One thing to me that I guess I just want to kind of get your opinion on, just because it's kind of a, it's always been sort of a pain point for me, but the, five letters, taxes. Oof, man, those rub me the wrong way sometimes, especially, you know, and I guess that all depends on, you know, you're a W-2 employee, you're an independent contractor, you're an LLC, an S corp, and those sort of things, right? But it's like, you know, I think the conversation that we're having and bringing awareness to, I mean, for me, I said financial planning, but you know, I think the theme is, you know, planning, right? Have a plan. And I think what you and your group are doing kind of more on a broad scale is looking at so many different things. You had mentioned insurance. There's all these things that maybe people don't, you know, consider, because it's like, you know, on the tax side, it's like, okay, you know, W-2 employee, right? I mean, I have a pretty basic understanding of, you know, you claim X and you make Y, and at the end of the year, you either owe or you don't owe, right? I mean, you're very limited with what you can do as an employee in terms of, you know, what your write-offs for taxes are, right? There's independent or dependents and houses and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, even from what I'm finding, you know, with, you know, just owning a business, I mean, you have your, you know, your quarterlies and this and that. And then the end of the year, like what I'm finding is like, if you're really not ahead of the game and looking at things kind of like what you're talking about on a much more forward thinking scale, like you're going to be behind the eight ball. And I mean, you said it early in the episode, but you're going to miss opportunities. And I think a lot of that revolves around the tax law, what you can do, what you can't do, not wanting to push the envelope to be on anyone's radar, but also, you know, a lot of these rules, exemptions, you know, they exist for a reason, right? And so, you know, you hear it in the media and politicians yell back and forth about how so-and-so made this and they didn't pay, you know, again, that's all relative. But I mean, can you kind of talk to taxes a little bit and the strategy on, you know, what that looks like and how you kind of, you know, employ that across, you know, the network and, you know, that sort of stuff?
Well, first of all, we have a goal, our CFPs, is to get people to pay 25% or less in taxes. And a lot of people are paying well above that in taxes and not really taking advantage. Most CPA firms are reactive and not proactive. And unfortunately, a lot of people say, well, I'm working with my CPA. So we get the last 3 years of tax returns and we notice that the CPA took standard deductions. And we go, why would you take standard deductions when you're running your own medical practice and there are so many things you can deduct? And we're talking about things that are black and white in the code, not pushing the envelope. But it's safe for the CPA from a compliance standpoint, just pay your taxes. In fact, I have that same conversation around the 15th of April every year. My CPA contacts me the night before and tells me how much I need to pay in estimated taxes because I always file an extension. I go, well, why not take this? Why not do that? And so forth. So I work with him from April till October to maximize my deductions and benefits. But there are so many things people can do that they're not aware of from a tax standpoint. So one of the things we do in the planning process is take a look back for the last 3 years on your tax returns, and let's see what you've done. And let's see how we can maximize, because a lot of people have a retirement savings goal and they go, I don't have any cash flow. No, because you're paying the government too much. You need to reallocate that money into your own pocket and not the government's pocket. I just finished an ebook that should be coming out probably next week on 10 strategies that people can use to reduce their tax liabilities. So we get in under the tent. And there's a lot of things that people are not aware of. And I'll give you an example. So working with someone in California that accumulated a lot of money in a pension plan. And he came to us and said, I'm in the process of moving to Lake Tahoe for retirement. And I was being a little facetious. I said, you're going to be on the right-hand side of the lake, right? The Nevada side. And he goes, no, actually, I'm buying a home on the California side. And I go, why? Do you have family there? He says, no. I said, is the fishing better there? Why are you moving to the California side? He said, because the homes are cheaper on the California side than they are on the Nevada side, for a very good reason, because if you become a resident on the Nevada side, there's a tax provision called the source tax provision. So if you take money out of a retirement account for 10 years or longer, you never have to pay the state where you accumulated the money. So in his case, it was a 13.3% tax savings annually. And I said, you can buy the house with the tax savings just going on the other side of the lake. And I remember he called me from the porch of a house and wanted me to verify. So we got his CPA on the phone. I got the tax code out, said you got to establish residency first for 6 months, and then any subsequent payments are not going to be taxed in California. It's a federal law, not a state law. But just little things like that, or when you retire in a certain state and your property tax is frozen, that's cash flow in your pocket. So just understanding the tax implications of where you live, where you decide to live in retirement, could play a major factor.
This is
it's huge.
Like, I mean, especially when you're dealing with like high net worth individuals, right? Like when you're saying your goal is to not have your clients pay any more than 25%, I'm like, my God, I would love to be paying only 25%, right? Yeah, I mean, mine's way higher than that. So my first question to you, Bill, is number one, you're a guest on my podcast, so I need to speak directly with you when I call. What is it called? My Financial Coaching. Yeah. I don't want Bill's assistant. So that's my first question is, when people want to reach out to you, how do we reach out to you? Website, phone number. And Jay can put that all right here.
Yeah. So just go to our website, myfinancialcoach.com, and you'll see all about the program. There's actually a button there where you can click and get a calendar from one of our CFPs. They'll give you the first 30 minutes or an hour, whatever it takes, to understand your situation, explain our whole process, so you can make a decision whether it fits or not for you. In fact, we have a policy that we say that if you put up the $2,000 and the $100 a month and you're with us for 60 days and you don't believe we brought any value, we'll refund all of your money, because we don't deserve to take your money if we can't bring any value for $2,000 or $2,200. So it's kind of a no risk guarantee, but it's a commitment on the person side too, because you've got to gather all of your information and you got to get into the planning mode. And I think that's where people procrastinate. It's like, I'm going to get to it. I'm going to do planning. I know I need to do planning, but they don't do it. And our CFPs are like the trainer in the gym. You know, we're going to keep you on track. We're going to understand what your goals and objectives are. And we're going to hold quarterly reviews with you at a minimum. But also, they're available 24/7 by email, and you have access to their calendar, so you can book as many appointments as you want. So if you're thinking about buying a piece of real estate and you go, I don't know if this is a good idea or not, I'm not going to ask a real estate agent because they're trying to sell me real estate.
It's always a good idea.
So I'm going to talk to my CFP, and I'm going to have them model out for me the cash flows of how much am I going to be servicing on debt. How much cash is coming out of this? Is it going to work for me in my situation? And you can do all of that modeling in real time with the CFP, since they have all your data. They know exactly your entire situation.
So to me, Bill, this is a little overwhelming, right? I've got my my personal wealth management guy. I've got my certified financial planner. I've got my my CPA. I've got my business manager, my practice. I've got my this, I got my that. Like, who's my head coach? Who do I go to first? Is that you? Are you the person that's the first person, first line of defense that's going to be like, hey, I'm going to help direct you to this person, this person, this person? Because I think physicians a lot of times get overwhelmed with these things.
Yeah, great question. Think of us as in the middle. So we're the coordinator, we're the coach. So you have an attorney. So we get to know your attorney. We get to know your CPA. We get to know your business manager. We know your goals and objectives. And we start to work with you. And we say, you know, this is a situation where you could reduce your taxes or maybe change your portfolio slightly. Talk to your wealth manager. Let's bring them into the picture. So again, we're like the primary care physician. So we're working with you kind of day to day with your other specialist, but you don't need to be talking to the CPA every day. But you know, little things like tax harvesting of your portfolio, you shouldn't be doing that at the end of the year like most people do. You should be doing it every month, taking your gains and losses and capturing those tax losses so you have them at the end of the year versus, you know, my broker always calls me at the end of the year telling me how much he's going to take in losses to offset the gains. We don't do that anymore. We look at those losses and gains throughout the year. So to answer your question, we're kind of the center piece of the go-to person to help coordinate things.
So you're kind of the quarterback.
Exactly.
Now, are you the guy that's going to have those difficult conversations with, say, my tax guy, right? To say like, all right, hey, Ryan's paying 37% tax. I think he should be down around 25% tax. And I've looked at all of his stuff, right? And this is where I think that we're losing, that we don't necessarily need to be. Is that because they're just playing it safe? Is that because they're taking a percent of it? Is it a little mixture of both? And are you the guy, or are your CFPs the individuals that will call them? I don't want to say call them out, but like have my best interest in, you know, your back pocket to kind of like have those tough conversations?
Yeah, and they're not really tough conversations in the sense, if we see an opportunity for you to do something, it's really going to your CPA to get their buy-in, and it's mostly educating them on what's happening. And I give you another live example. So I sold my company years ago to a New York Stock Exchange company, and they gave me 15% in their stock and 85% in cash. So I'm sitting there with their stock. I had zero basis, and the stock went up 300%. So I said, hey, I've got this asset. What ideas do you have for me if I start to sell this stock? Because I think it's going to go down in the future, if I should sell the stock to liquidate some of it. He said, just pay your taxes. I go, I'm in California. That's 20% federal and 13.3 state. So I went out and researched the charitable remainder trust. And I donated a portion of those shares into a CRUT, CRT. I took a tax deduction. I liquidated the stock without any tax. And today I'm realizing a 7.3% lifetime income of principal and interest from the trust for the rest of my life and my wife's life. And then the proceeds will go into a family foundation. That's a tax strategy. My CPA says, oh, that sounds pretty good. Why didn't you bring me something like that?
Do you so get checks via podcast? Because yeah, I could send my $2,000 here right now.
This is just, I feel like a lot of this, Bill, is just like, I mean, a lot of the stuff you're talking about, I mean, you can't be the only person in the world that knows this. Is this just like an access thing? Like, and again, I mean, I know it's situational, but I mean, is your average, you know, CFP just not well versed in these sort of strategies? And that's where kind of bringing everyone together on the same page to kind of have that like team approach of, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Because, I mean, it kind of sounded like you figured that out and brought that to your, you see what I'm saying? Like, I guess a lot of the strategies and the things that you guys are kind of using as, you know, strategies, whether it's tax liability or, you know, negotiating or whatever it might be, are these just things that you've picked up and learned across, you know, your way and, you know, several decades of being kind of in that industry and use it and kind of share it with your team? Or, I mean, like, walk me through that piece of it.
Yeah. Great question. So over the years, I've interacted with a number of professionals throughout the country. So I knew who was a specialist in charitable giving, who was a specialist in pension plans, who had strategies that I could take money out of my qualified pension plan without paying any income tax on it and so forth. So we put together what we call subject matter experts. So if you go to our website, we have about maybe 10 firms that I've identified that are those subject matter experts. Again, going back to the primary care example. So our CFPs know enough to identify, hey, this is the situation. You have an office building and you've done 1031 exchanges, and now you're tired of doing that. You're ready for retirement. You need to liquidate the dollars, and you're trying to minimize or avoid capital gains tax on the sale of the building. Who should we bring in? So we'll bring in a tax expert we know that has done a lot of these 1031 conversions and not pay any capital gains tax. And we go educate your CFP, your CPA, and help, they will help implement the strategy for you. So you'd be working with them independent of us, but we vetted these firms out. And this is decades of knowing these firms and these people around the country.
So just, I mean, it sounds to me like it's just, you know, an elite network of people that, you know, people that have developed relationships with you and are part of My Financial Coach, you know, potentially if need be, they have access to this network through your group, but can potentially be referred to them in certain situations, but work with them independently.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It's part of the planning process. As we go through, we're going to find probably issues, and we're going to need solutions. And if your current advisors haven't brought those types of solutions, we'll start the educational process and bring in some subject matter experts.
That's great. This is amazing info. Yeah. I mean,
honestly, when Dr. Molly and I first were talking, I'm like, financial planning, I'm like looking at Bill, I'm Harvard Business School. I'm like, man, what are we going to talk about here? I mean, and it just like, it keeps going. I mean, there's so many layers.
Yeah. And I hope that our guests really take advantage of this and reach out to you, Bill and your colleagues, because I mean, this 45 to minutes to an hour that we've spent together, I've gained a tremendous amount of knowledge and confidence in what you do, how you do it. And I'm definitely going to be reaching out to you personally hopefully get something going here, because I do feel like you are an advocate. I love the fact that you predominantly work with physicians. And by the way, when you're at that conference for MDVIP, if my good buddy, do you know Greg Beato?
Where the conference is?
No. Do you know my buddy, Greg Beato, who's in Blacksburg, Virginia? He's an MDVIP.
I may know him by face. My contact is Brett Jorgensen, the CEO. We grew up in the Young Presidents Organization.
Okay.
When we were both young presidents,
Well, I'll send you a photo, Greg. He actually was on one of our previous, he had a two-parter because it was so long. It was the concierge medicine episode. So if you just look back on the red carpet podcast on YouTube or however you access your podcast, you'll see Greg Beato. We were college roommates and
he'll be there for sure.
He'll definitely be there. And if not, next time you come across him, just say, hey, we have something in common.
we'll have a booth there at the conference, and he's probably going to attend since he's right down the road. It's in Washington, D.C. this year.
Right there.
That's so. What I said. Yeah, and I thought he may mention something about that. Hey, Bill, so one last thing for me. So you had mentioned that you were going to release like a digital booklet or some type of like audiobook or something like that, like on 10 common things that maybe people aren't thinking about in terms of like tax liability and stuff. Is that going to be just on the website, or how are you releasing that?
Yes. So if you go to myfinancialcoach.com, you'll see My Financial Coach University. And in that university, we have lots of content. We have videos and webinars we put together with a number of physician organizations. And we have guests that have spoken also on those webinars. And that's where the book will be posted for them to download. Like, we noticed that we work with a lot of physicians coming from White Coat Investor, and they seem to love real estate. And because they've been indoctrinated through the education there about buying real estate. So, my CFPs try to kind of bring reality, because they say, I want real estate, I want passive income. And the first question is, do you know how to fix toilets? And they go, what? They go, who's going to manage the building?
Right.
Who's going to coordinate the leasing agent? What type of real estate do you want to buy? So we brought on actually one of my YPO friends, who's the former ambassador to Croatia, who's made a lot of money in real estate. And on that website, he's got a webinar educating people on the various aspects of real estate you should look at. Whether you want liquidity, can you afford to tie up your money? Do you want income and so forth? And he's not selling anything. He doesn't take any more money. And but we have that type of education in My Financial Coach University, and that's where the book will be posted.
Awesome. No, that's great.
Tons of great resources, tons of great content. Bill, I just want to thank you for your time tonight. This has been extremely educational for myself. I think I speak for Travis with that as well, and hopefully for our guests. And again, Jay's going to be able to do some great stuff down here to incorporate that. But any final questions for us at all, Bill?
No, it's great. Next time up in Sedona, look me up.
We're going to go grab a cocktail together, whether it's at the Enchantment. Have you been to any of those restaurants there? Like,
Yeah. Yeah, we actually have a deal with Enchantment from our country club.
Tiachi? Chiachi.
Yes.
Chiachi is one. Miyamo is the spa, but Chiachi is the one kind of more standard restaurant. My boys and I were playing pickleball there. God, it's just such a incredible resort, and it's just nestled right in there in Boynton Canyon. It's beautiful.
I obviously have been working too much, so I need to get out there next time.
I've invited you, so you need to join us. But thank you again, Bill. We appreciate your time tonight.
Thanks for the time.
Appreciate it. So, everyone, thanks for, checking in with us and, watching the podcast. Obviously, we appreciate all the support. Looking for any feedback, any topics, things that you're, interested in maybe getting more content on, things for Dr. Molly and I to talk about. Obviously, any suggestions, please send them over. We really want to thank Bill for all your time tonight. We greatly appreciate it. I know everyone that we take, time away from our families to do this. I know that we all thoroughly enjoy it, and really just thank you so much for all the content, all the information. There's so much. So I know we want to give people, the viewers, an opportunity to kind of access your team. So myfinancialcoach.com will be right here. There's a ton of stuff on the website that we talked about, from the university component to getting set up with you and your team. I know that both Ryan and I both personally are going to reach out. So looking forward to that. Thank you again.
Subscriptions, likes, subscribe, shares, comments, suggestions, all of that. And
hey, red carpet out.
We'll see you again soon.
Thanks.
Have a great night. As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.